Welcome to the Herb Doctor podcast with Dr. Dailish Clare and myself, Katrina Hegarty. Good afternoon, Dailish. How are you today?
Couldn't be better.
Great. Lovely to hear that. How has your week been? What have you been up to?
Well, since the last podcast, what I've been up to of relevance is I've been to a whole day's seminar on pain from a functional medicine point of view. And that looks at the background to all of these conditions that we all suffer from. And the topic of the day was pain. So I'm going to try and condense some of the differentiations that they focused on that day, and also some of my own interpretations from my clinical experience, or reflected through my own experience over many years of practice, and highlighting what we can or can't do with herbal medicines and how it might dovetail. So.
Well, I suppose everybody suffers from pain in one sense. So, yeah, sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Over to you.
So, the things that we all know about pain, it affects our mood and vice versa. If we're not in pain, we're in a good mood. If we're in pain, it can really bring us down. I was going to do a whole thing on the statistics of pain, but who cares? Because we only care about the pain that we have, or the pain that our loved ones are living with and that we have to bear witness to and live with the moods of. Yeah. So the day was, I'd like to just thank Dr. Datis Karasian from the United States, who gave such a fascinating talk, and his level of detail into all of the physiology, biochemistry, neurotransmitters, I think is the background to filtering out what I can fit in a podcast. But it was a great background to have. And also our own Dr. Richard Rucker from Ennis, who's a functional medicine practicing doctor there. He gave a very good introductory lecture. A lot of what I heard that day was not new, but it certainly put it forward in a way that makes my patient stories a lot more understandable. So I'm going to see if I can offer this understanding to all of you listeners out there in case it might be helpful in how you view your pain. Okay, so I'm trying to bring it down. Just in case people are in a hurry, I've got some takeaway messages to start with. Movement. Movement is number one, number one, number one. Sitting is the new smoking. Don't start smoking just because you're not sitting. Gut and food are key elements. Sleep is a key element. Managing expectations, and that depends a lot on whether the pain is localized or centralized. So I'll come on to that. Touch is important. One of Dr. Karasian's final things, I'm going to bring it right up front, is that if you're living on your own, it's highly recommended that you either have a massage or some kind of physical therapy that's not about relieving pain, if you like. Do you know what I mean? So some kind of a soothing massage. But tell the massage person, therapist, that you suffer from chronic pain because you may have hypersensitive areas. So distraction can be helpful, and quieting the mind. So getting that balance right between distraction and quieting is quite a skill. So a lot of this is life skill based management. And then we go on to what we can expect from herbs or other practitioners apart from the massage therapist. To highlight the food, if you have poor digestion, and this means that if eating a meal has any other effects than not feeling full, when you get up from leaving the table, the only thing you should feel is not full. If you're windy, bloated, brain fog, any of those things, it means that you need to pay big attention to your gut function. Okay, and that will be a big help for pain. If you have any other symptoms apart from feeling full, then there's a very high suspicion of gluten involvement. Sometimes it's gluten, sometimes it's wheat. So there can be some ways of figuring that out. Another one I add to this is vitamin D. Vitamin D, response of pain reduction management with vitamin D depends on whether you're deficient or not. There's very reasonable evidence that if you're deficient in vitamin D, taking supplements of vitamin D in order to reach an empowering level, right, would be helpful. So it's best to have it monitored. And if you're below 50, and some people are below 30 nanomoles per liter, then that's deficient. And what you want them to be is above 75 and be lower than 125. Okay, and I'm saying that because some guidelines indicate that between 50 and 75 might be okay. I don't think it is for people in pain, because you want to make sure it's the optimum. Okay. Also for other reasons, but I'm concentrating on pain for the minute. You don't want your levels to be above 250 because they can be potentially harmful. I've never had a patient that I was monitoring that had a level that high. The other message to kind of take away with is pain can cause anxiety as well as low mood, because once we're in pain, our brain is thinking that we're in danger, and that makes us anxious. All right. And that's tiring. So danger. And the other thing is, danger always needs a story. The kind of pain I'm going to concentrate on today is centralized pain. And that is all, it's all happening in the brain. But the another part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, has to give the pain a story. Right. The pain is worse in my arthritis because this. The pain is worse. I got cystitis pain. It was because of that. It was. So we have to have a story. And sometimes the story is very, very, very embedded, and we won't let it go. So what I'm saying is, if you want to change your level of pain, you need to change the story. And if it's centralized pain, you have to accept it without the story. There is no story. It's just there. That's tough, isn't it? Because the story can be very comforting, you know. Yeah. Okay. Now, with the centralized pain, if you have localized pain, it's localized somewhere, right? If I fracture my finger, I'll have pain in my finger. Mm. If I stub my toe, I'll have pain in my toe. If I burn my thigh, I'll have pain in my thigh. And the pain is reflected in if you can see the fracture, it's bent and it's swollen and it's not functioning well. That's localized pain, right? If I've got pain in my gallbladder, it is under the right side of my liver. If I've pain in my appendix, I get pain down on the right side of my abdomen. If I have a toothache, I have pain in my tooth. And that's usually acute inflammation. And when you treat the localized pain, or it heals, or within the usual period of time, end of story, right? And one of my conclusions with all of this is that if you've got an acutely painful condition, treat it early and treat it well, right? You want pain relief so that this doesn't become chronic, okay?
Yeah.
So you look for clues in the clinical findings, a description of the sensations, and also a history of trauma. And then some investigations can offer clues in monitoring. Like if you've got pain low down on the right side of your tummy and you've got a raised white cell count, you're thinking, right, that's likely to be appendicitis. If you've got a fracture on your x-ray, that's likely to be. With centralized pain, there's no test. There's no x-ray. There's no nothing to kind of go, oh, there it is. You know, where you feel the pain depends on which parts of your brain are zapping. Yeah.
Yeah.
When we're in pain, we feel helpless. We feel alone. We feel isolated. We feel that our pain is unique, and that nobody else's pain is the same. But we're so centrally focused that it's only the pain that matters.
Yeah.
So that's it's and it affects work, sports, a consistency of how we do anything. It affects our life planning. You know, our sons getting married, the third Thursday of next month. Do I know if my pain, which recurs and is chronic, will I be able to go? Will I be able to go to a wedding, a graduation, a christening, whatever it is happening in the family? Will I be able to meet my friends, to go for the swim every Tuesday? You know, it's very disheartening. It takes a reimagining of our lives.
It also sounds like, and it feels that it's limiting you doing stuff by using that example of going to a wedding.
Yeah.
That you feel that you can't go, or it's stopping you from going.
And then there's a vicious circle, because you get anxious about whether you can't go. Mm. And then anxiety makes it more likely to get the pain. So what can we pull back from all of this? The other thing is, people don't understand. You're the walking wounded. You're the disabled without the crutches or the wheelchair, you know. You should see Kat's eyes. Her eyes are going up to heaven. So invisible disability, and that can be a lonely place to be. And you can feel very vulnerable in public. You know, it's a vulnerable is a good word, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. When you're thinking about pain, you're thinking about, is it the nerves, is it the bones, is it the ligaments, is it the tendons, is it the organs? Like, that's one way to think about it, okay? And then how is it manifesting? And why, if it's not healed according to the usual inflammatory cycle of injury, inflammation, rest, bruising, you know, and then settling, if it's not settling and it's becoming a recurring thing, what why is that happening for you, and how can you manage it better? This can be, like, one example is, somebody might have arthritis and they go and have knee surgery. The knee surgery went perfectly smooth, and it's a good recovery time. You heal 3-4 months later, you're walking with the stick, then you're walking without the stick, and then it's a lot better than it was before the surgery. People whose osteoarthritis pain becomes centralized, everything went perfectly, the knee fits beautifully, it's not caused any reaction, and yet the pain persists. It's because the pain is no longer coming from the knee, it's actually being generated in the brain.
Yes, okay.
And this can be very confusing for patients and for doctors. And I don't, there's no way of knowing whose pain is centralized and whose isn't. The only way to treat it is to replace the knee. But then afterwards, you know, if it's still painful, you don't want the knee surgery to be repeated, because the pain won't go away by repeating the surgery. That's what I mean. Okay. Restoring quality of life is possible. Healing is possible. Healing is possible by modulating. Okay. So harm reduction, prevention of escalation, and gradually down modulating the trigger responses from the brain. And sometimes the thing that's most resistant to change is the narrative. Okay. So the pain is just the pain. It's not a danger. You're not in mortal danger. If you walk and you feel pain, that won't make the pain worse. Confidence is another thing. If you trip over something, anybody can trip over something, but because you're in pain, you blame the pain. And then you stop exercising and you stop moving. All right. Another wave of the hand from Kat. I was thinking of you because Kat does have chronic pain. I have chronic pain. I get up in the morning and it's hippity-hoppity over to the bathroom and onto the yoga mat. And when I'm on the yoga mat, it's, oh my God. And then I'm going, this is pain relief. This is not yoga for quieting the mind. This is actual pain relief. After 15 minutes of yoga, I'm fine. And the rest of the day is fine. But that is, and that's another kind of pain, which is the fascia pain around the muscle fibers. And I've had it since I was 30, 35. I can remember when I was 35 thinking, Jesus, how will I be when I'm in my 60s and 70s in pain?
You were right.
I was right. Let that be, if you're having pain when you're peeling potatoes at the sink and have to lean on the sink, you need to do yoga now. Right. If you're 35 or 40, and I wish I had known this. But anyway, so for centralized pain, that is the hardest to address because we don't know much about it. It's always associated with chronic fatigue and brain fog. So chronic pain is when pain has no localized features. It's a particular sensations are associated with it. It's either recurrent, variable, but a lot of the time is nearly always there, and is associated with all these features. And many of the amplification factors can be reduced by lifestyle and herbal medicines and acupuncture and loads of other things that I'll come on to. Analgesics, anxiolytics, sedatives and antidepressants. These are very valuable drugs, right? But this is the worst case scenario for them because they don't resolve anything and the pain doesn't abate. As soon as you stop them, the pain comes back. So the pain is just the pain, and I'm a coward. I hate pain. But this is when you've tried everything else or in accompaniment with other things so that you can gradually reduce the drugs as a possibility. All right. As everybody knows by now, this isn't ideologically driven. This is because a lot of the drugs have long-term side effects. And when things are chronic, you're most likely to be exposed to the ones, to the toxic effects over a long period of time. And that's to organs, all right? So I'm not being dismissive of pain. I'm not saying that I'm not sympathetic. And the biggest thing is this pain is not imaginary. If you're feeling like, oh my God, am I being overdramatic, or, you know, is this my own doing? Is this in my head? You know, people keep thinking things are in their head, but in fact they're in the physiology, biochemistry, cytokines, all of that. They can all be useful. I would put a caution in there: avoid opioids as much as you possibly can. A, because they don't work for this kind of chronic pain, but B, because they aggravate it. They make you more sensitive to pain in the long term. So local pain, local treatment. So if you have isolated arthritis of your knee or your hip, or you've injured yourself, or you've overstrained, or you've done something where the trauma equals the pain, it's all a consistent feature, the pain is in the right place, it's the right amplification, right? If all of those things are there, that's local pain, local treatment. You can take painkillers, take enough painkillers to kill the pain. If you've got a fracture, don't be in pain being stoic. You don't want this pain to become chronic. So this is where I'm advocating natural and pharma methods of pain relief, because you don't want pain and inflammation to be prolonged. It tunes in the central nervous system via the spine. Okay. And you'll also find that there's visible signs of heat, creaking, grating joints if there's arthritis, you know, a history of injury, all of those things. So I'm not particularly going to talk about them because that's very straightforward. Mm-hmm. Your doctor will be grand, your physiotherapist, you know, your osteopath, they'll all be thrilled with this pain, you know, because they can make it go away in a short period of time. We've got the feel-good factor for your therapeutic practitioners. However, the centralized pain can come from a whole myriad of sources, but basically it's prolonged localized pain out of the ordinary, right? Yeah. It hasn't settled down, it's persisting. And what has happened is the pain is felt in the periphery, we call it, the toe, the foot, the thigh, the whatever. It relays to the spinal cord, a relay then up to the thalamus. And from the thalamus, it's disseminated to all kinds of areas of the brain, right? There's lots of different folk. I could give you very big words for all of this. but basically, they become then part of their self-generating, right? Mm-hmm. And firing. It's like an amplification and a sensitivity to firing of all of these pain receptors, you know.
Sure.
To understand this, we need to think about how the nervous system works. Okay. So how does the nervous system work?
Tell me.
All right. It's like I had to change this analogy. It's like a machine that only triggers with a threshold of pressure. You know, anybody who's used a dishwasher, and I'm sure most people have by now, you push, 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 and then it goes, and then the water starts flooding in. That's what a nerve is like. It's an on-off. You push, nothing, push, nothing, push, nothing, push, pshum. The whole electric system starts and the valves open and the water. So it's an on-off mechanism. It either fires or it doesn't, okay? And it fires according to the threshold. And you very soon you get know exactly what the threshold is, and you do it on automatic pilot, and you just go psh, tum, and the machine is on. You're not thinking about it. You've already tested it 50 times and you know exactly how to do it. So it's an automatic pilot. So when you've practiced the pressure on closing the door, when enough force is applied, and you get to know what suits you. But what happens with the centralized pain is that you only have to barely touch it and it goes, and all starts firing. Do you get it? It's a threshold. So this is an electrolyte effect. You get a massive surge of electrolytes across the cell membrane, right? And zip, off goes the nerve transmission. And it zips all over the brain. It's like one of those things, you know, where the electric lights on the circuit, you know, in a circle glass bowl, you know, and it goes everywhere. It's distributed. And then depending on the kind of pain. Anyway, that's enough. You know that. So this is an electrical signal. This is so the flood of water is a fast, passive release of energy. So once you get that pressure on and click, whoosh, there's a hole. It's a downward flow. It's like a waterfall. Psh, off it goes. And that's passive. So there's behind the dam, there's a whole buildup of energy. If you look at a dam, the water behind the wall will be a pressure ready to go, ready to be released.
Like a dam.
They open the dam and whoosh, it all comes out. Mm-hmm. That's passive energy. Mm-hmm. And they turn that into electricity.
Yes.
Right? And your cell, I've just thought of this is brilliant. The cell turns it into energy called ATP.
Mm.
So you've got a little hydroelectric kind of system or to it. But then you have to close the dam in order to build the energy back up again. Okay? So there's electrolyte exchange, release, transmit it all over the place. And then you've got to build it up. That's the ATP, right? So you've got a little battery system in there. This is an active process that keeps your life, the life source of every cell in your body, running smoothly. But they're particularly active in the brain. The other thing to note is that because it's a threshold that you reach or you don't reach, there's no quiet button or loud button, right? If the signal is intense, well, then it just fires frequently. Do you want me to say that again?
Yeah, I do.
So there's a threshold. Mm. If you reach the threshold, you get the nerve signal.
Yes.
But there's no such thing as a quiet signal or a loud signal. There's just the signal.
Okay, yeah.
So if the stimulation is intense, then you get, they rapid fire. They go zip, 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 zip. Right?
I get it.
Now, if they don't get enough time between zips, they don't have time to build up the energy.
Yes, I understand. Yeah.
And this is why chronic pain is associated with chronic fatigue.
Oh, the penny's just dropped now.
I know. And if people have this centralized pain and they get to the point where they've no energy, They walk their 200 yards and all the cells have zapped and they haven't had time to recharge, then they don't have any more energy. They're not imagining it. You know, they're not thinking, well, if I get my willpower out and pull up my socks, it has to be a gradual increase with very small increments.
The one thing I will say from my own experience is that I know now that I have to stop and sit for a second and recover before I get up and move again, because I've done the, it's, your head is saying one thing, but your body is saying something completely different.
Yep.
So that's my understanding of it. Yeah.
And is it your experience that as you've gradually increased your scope,
yes,
you've gradually increased your resilience.
Yes,
and that's you teaching. That's the neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
This is why this isn't hopeless, guys. But once you understand it, you kind of go, okay, now I can mm-hmm. plan. I can try and pull this back a little bit so that I'm managing it rather than I'm a victim of it,
sure.
I suppose.
But the one thing I will say about it is, as we mentioned, frustration earlier, you kind of I've learned that I have to work with it, because if I resist against it, then it's only going to get the better of me. And my head wants to go, but my body's going, no, you have to sit down for a second before you get up again.
Yeah.
So it's just making sure that you line it up, isn't that it? Maybe?
And what you're describing there is like a mini little vicious circle.
Mm.
You know, so you're absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the electrolytes, which are what the water is like, full of electrolytes, mm-hmm. right, which are the salts, and cell energy is needed for managing muscle tension and energy. So that's why the chronic fatigue. Centralized pain is like turning down the volume of your threshold. Your threshold is signaled at much lower. Like all you have to do is tap the dishwasher button mm-hmm. and off it goes. So every time you brush past it, you're going, oof, off goes the dishwasher again. Okay, you'll never be able to run your dishwasher again without thinking of this. Okay. And it's stuck there. So the idea behind all of this management is to unstuck it. Okay. Here's the other fascinating thing. Even if the original injury has healed, the brain continues to receive and send pain signals. It's a malfunction in the nervous system.
Ooh.
Ooh. Okay. I'll come back to that.
Do.
All right. So how can you tell the difference? We've already talked about what are the features of the localized pain, right, out in the body or whatever, even in the organs, they're localized to the body. Central pain involves changes in the way you feel pain. So where it hurts, the location of the pain depends on the affected part of your nervous system, not your body. So you can get pains in your feet, but it's actually an abnormality in the brain. A particular area representing the toes.
Ooh, okay. Right, okay, I got it, yeah.
When it hurts, it's usually constant, but it can come and go. It can happen without something happening to your body that would cause the pain. So there you are, living your best life, and the next thing, oh my God, this pain is coming back again, right, and stopping you, and you can't rely on your body and whatever. Even though there's no new injury, no aggravation of a recurring of a past injury, the intensity of the pain can be moderate to severe, but it can be variable. It can be anything, mild, moderate, severe. It can alter your sense of touch. Sometimes just lightly push against you, and the next thing, the pain starts off.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
It can also cause numbness or sensations like tingling or pins and needles. Mm. Okay. When it starts, it can start within weeks, months, or even years of an illness, injury, or another related event. How amazing.
Yeah.
We truly are remarkable. Pain might be more intense if you're cold, upset, stressed, or startled. Right? The level of physical activity can also affect the pain. And that's another reason what you're describing. The other interesting thing is that people who have centralized pain like this often have a higher threshold for localized pain.
Mm.
Right. So that's a very interesting. Descriptions are things like burning, sharp, stabbing, itching, severe itching, painful numbness or tingling, deep tissue or muscle pain, aching or intense pressure, cutting or slicing. So they're very dramatic. Right,
yeah.
As you can imagine.
Sounds
you're
like
right.
It.
So it can happen either to injury of your brain or spinal cord, and things that can cause that is brain cancer or any kind of tumor in the brain because it's causing pressure, brain surgery or even spinal surgery, concussions. This is one of the commonest ones, the lecturer said, that people, you ask and they say, are you sure you never had an injury? And they kind of go, well, there was the time that, you know. So concussion can have a lot of problems, even with the latent period, and any kind of traumatic brain injuries, falling off ladders and all that kind of thing. Degenerative or inflammatory conditions like multiple sclerosis or Parkinson's disease affecting the brain or the spinal nervous tissue. Epilepsy and non-epileptic seizures. And this is something that's kind of a feature of a very close member of my family. Infections, spinal cord injuries and stroke. You know, some people, not everybody who has a stroke gets this, but some people do get pain after a stroke and it's very hard to manage. You can also, as I say, get centralized pain if you have any chronic pain localized to other areas of the body. So localized can become centralized. Fibromyalgia is a central pain disorder. Myofascial pain. Now, this preparing for this podcast sent me down a whole thing of myofascial pain. Now, the interesting thing is that it's usually, unlike fibromyalgia, it's usually on one side of the body. It's usually localized to a particular area and is related to posture and legs being a different length and scoliosis and hypermobility. There's lots of things that can be associated with it. But it's nearly always down one side of the body. And this, I immediately thought of my general practice in London when a lot of patients from the South Mediterranean, mainly Greece, would come and they complain of pain all down one side. Oh, the pain is terrible here. It's terrible all down one side. And I don't think I've ever, until preparing for this podcast, realised that this is actually a feature, or maybe it's been described since. There's so many things been described since I started in medicine. But it certainly didn't register with me that this was, they were put down as being heart sink patients because they would keep coming back with this pain. As I say, your practitioner of any description is not going, oh, yippee, we have a case of centralized pain syndrome, because it's so difficult for patients. Mm. And it's so frustrating for practitioners. We only want the patients that we know we can treat and send and go away happy, you know. Mm. But this is long-term mentoring and encouragement and compassion, you know, even when it doesn't get better over for a long period of time. It's managing. Yeah, it's about managing expectations and then managing what the patient can do within the expectations of what can be changed. So myofascial pain, if it's just a localized myofascial pain in response to a particular repetitive injury or dislocation, or musicians get it as well, because they're constantly doing, particularly guitarists will have a particular kind, flautist will have another kind. So it's very common among musicians. But if it goes on to the trigger points, then triggering distal parts of the body not related to the injury, then you've got a centralized pain. Irritable bowel syndrome can involve dysfunction in how the central nervous system processes signals from the gut. So there's nothing actually wrong physiologically with the gut, but the relationship to the brain is amplified. Chronic low back pain, which would be my one, long-lasting lumbar pain, can transition from a structural issue like a disc injury to a centralized pain condition. And this is further complicated by the fact that if you send anybody my age going down Shop Street, which is the main street in Galway, they would have disc prolapses and all sorts of things, facet joint degeneration and all on their MRI. But the pain is more likely to be centralised, or needs to be considered as to whether it's centralised pain. Because the management would be different. Arthritis and rheumatoid arthritis and any of the autonomic painful conditions. Chronic localized pain can become widespread as the central nervous system starts amplifying the pain signals. And I've seen that in patients who have very minimal joint involvement, minimal joint swelling and whatever, but all happening in a pattern and inconsistent with the blood tests for an autonomic nervous system. But the level of pain is out of sync with the presentation of physical symptoms. So that was interesting. Endometriosis and chronic pelvic pain. Recurring long-term pelvic pain can lead to both peripheral and central sensitization over time. And this is particularly important because endometriosis can take 5 or 7 years and be very severe by the time people actually get to have a laparoscopy. And by then, the pain may well be centralized. And so they have the hormone suppressant therapy and they have the surgery, but the pain persists. Okay. Temporomandibular joint, chronic jaw pain, can again become centralized. Migraines and chronic headaches often transition from episodic headaches to a state of chronic central neurogenic pain. Taking the painkillers will not make any difference. Compressed regional pain syndrome. Okay, and the one we talked about in the last podcast was the interstitial cystitis. Mm-hmm. And this is the bladder pain syndrome. And all of the ways that I advised, thankfully, have turned out to be relevant to the centralized pain. Although until this week, I didn't really have that framework. This is about having a framework for things so you can then manage expectations. Chronic fatigue syndrome is often associated with widespread centralized pain. Post-surgical or post-traumatic pain, pain that persists or worsens for more than 3 months after a physical injury or surgery. And I mean, I would specifically say gallbladder pain. People can have the gallbladder removed, but they still have the problem with the pain. So things to indicate that it's likely to be centralized is the pain is no longer restricted to the original injured site. Extreme sensitivity to pain, hyperalgesia, and abnormal sensitivity to pain caused by damaged pain receptors, nerve damage, or chemical changes in nerve pathways. So you have a stimulus that wouldn't normally cause pain, but it actually triggers this chronic pain. Fatigue and sleep disorders, high correlation, and cognitive dysfunction, often referred to as fibro fog or brain fog, involving issues with focus and memory. And you always have a high alert for it if they haven't responded to local manipulation, anti-inflammatory medications, opioid therapy, or any of the other physical therapies, cognitive behavior therapy, requiring approaches that target the nervous system. So we're on to how do you treat it? Right. Initially, you think, oh, it's a pain in the toe. They had an injury. Let's treat that. And then you go, God, 6 months later, and they're still having this pain in the toe. And the equivalent for any other condition, then you go on to treating the nervous system, not the toe. Got it?
Got it.
Yep. I think I'm saying things, the same thing in several different ways, but it's such a new concept for people that I'm hoping that's helpful. Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
So feedback, guys. I don't know who you are out there. So give me feedback as to whether I'm hitting the right level of information, a bit more detail, a bit less detail, any conditions you might want to. Okay. Here's how I think about sensitization. Did you ever know my dog Tigger?
No.
No, it was before I knew you. My dog Tigger was the most gorgeous golden retriever.
Oh.
I spent 15 years going, hey Tigger, hey Tigger, hey Tigger, you know, calling him in the woods, on the beach, whatever, you know, and he'd respond to his name and I'd see the tail going wag, 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 wag. Now, I haven't had Tigger for about 15 years. I can see a golden retriever when I'm walking the prom or in the woods much sooner than everybody else. I'll be going, oh, look at the golden retriever. Oh, look, it's just so gorgeous. Because I've sensitized. My brain has imprinted those signals, that bushy tail, the colour, the lopey kind of, I can see the whole thing just is in my brain. So other people don't see golden retrievers the same way I do. I've trained my brain to see golden retrievers. So that's, instead of that being a thin wool, thread of wool, I now have a thread of rope. Okay, or instead of a fishing line, I made the fishing line into a piece of wool, and I made the piece of wool into a thin rope, and then I made the thin rope into a thicker rope. So it's more sensitized, right? And that's what happens with the pain. That's the mechanism of action.
Yeah.
The more you concentrate on the pain, the more attention you give it, the more you stroke it and mind it and, you know, think you're doing all the best things, you know, to, you know, you go to bed with it and you kind of think, oh, that's not going to help. So you want to take the focus off the pain. Mm-hmm. You want to train the brain to do the opposite. You want to train the brain to make the rope into a thinner rope and a wool skein. What's it? What do you call a piece of wool? A length of wool, and then into a fishing wire size or a thread size, right? Which would be the usual, right? But how long did it take me to develop that sensitized awareness of golden retrievers? 15 years. I would say that most people, by the time they are going to the chronic pain clinic or experiencing the chronic pain, it's been a long, long time. Recovery is a long, long time. Okay. Yeah. Now, everybody is different, you know, but there is, it's neuroplasticity that developed that, and you use neuroplasticity to shrink it. Okay. But not today or tomorrow. And it's not something that somebody can do for you. It's something you have to do for yourself. Mm-hmm. And you have to trial and error to find the things that are right for you. Because I don't think everybody can do everything. People who have this are not exaggerating and they're not being over dramatic.
Yeah, I'd like you to say that again.
Okay. People who have this aren't exaggerating or being over dramatic.
Yeah.
It hurts. If you're living with somebody that's experiencing this, you can't do anything. But that also means that you can't be cross with them. You can't be.
Yeah.
All you can do is say how it's affecting you. I find your low mood to do with pain difficult to deal with. I find this. You have to speak with the I word. All right. And you can be curious. You can ask. You can facilitate, you know, you can, you know, build a ramp, you know, if that's what's needed. You can, you know, help in structural ways. You can understand that by 6 o'clock they've had it, they're done, they're gone to bed, you know, and sometimes you do need to go to bed that early if you've been doing the work all day. This isn't about never going to bed either. So you don't take on see, most of us, if we see somebody in pain, we want to help. And if we can't help, we can feel rejected. So a lot of this is all the people around you need to just kind of go, that's what Harry needs or that's what Marianne needs to do and whatever. And that's fine. They learn to manage and they take part as much as possible. They do what they can. So I think that's really kind of, it could be very helpful to people who are in the immediate circle of somebody with pain. And they can give a hand massage, a foot massage. They can, you know, sing. You know, there's things that you can do. You know, singing is a great distraction. It's one of the best. Mm-hmm. The arts, any kind of involvement in the arts is fantastic. You know, and apparently there's a whole lot of evidence. Being in green spaces will help, just in case I forget to mention that at the end. Okay, we're on to the management. So another way of looking at this is I've mentioned the distal nerves go to the spine. Right, your stub toe pain fibers go to the spine. The spine goes to the thalamus and the thalamus then broadcasts. I read that word and I thought, that's lovely. That really, and Kat is all into her radio performance career. She's, you know, moving forward now. So what we're doing is we're broadcasting it around the brain. If you have a leaky thalamus, all right, you've heard of leaky gut. Mm-hmm. I would say leaky endothelium, leaky blood-brain barrier, all of these barriers. These are another whole podcast, guys,
yes,
where toning all of these is very important. Anyway, so if you have a leaky thalamus, that's one reason, one of the ways of visualizing that these signals need to be calmed down. This is kind of like a central focus of it, because they can amplify the signals before they even reach the consciousness. These can also be affected by social pain like rejection, isolation, and an absence of physical touch. All right. So think of the thalamus as a major train junction where the impulses are then broadcast. So if you think of it like that. Okay. So it's not how much pain you have, it's how much it bothers you. So that's you manage how much it bothers you. The other thing that centralized pain can do is that it can amplify the sensations from our organs, like the digestive system with the irritable bowel syndrome and the painful periods and all of that. It's like it amplifies all of those things. And we will get on to, this is now the good news. Do you want to? Okay, I think yes, it's definitely time for the good news, isn't
please.
It? We do have our own pharmacy. There's a critical area in the brain, midbrain, for pain modulation. All right, modulation is it can alter it up and down. So, of course, we want to modulate it down because the body is always looking for homeodynamic balance, where everything is balanced. So it can send signals down the spinal cord to physically block pain messages before they reach the brain. And the body's natural opioid system, any clues, any ideas? We have natural opioids called endorphins.
Oh, in our brain, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is what they do. They can calm down these pain signals. So any ways of upregulating these down regulators. You think of an escalator going up and down, you know, you want to emphasize the down one. So the actions of, we'll go on to that. The actions of the nerve impulses are influenced at all levels by biochemistry of prostaglandins, histamine, cytokines, insulin, and other hormones, including those released from body fat. Mm. Okay. No big surprise there. Okay. And vitamin D acts like a hormone. Now in there, I've kind of put about 3 hours of lectures. All right. So anything that affects inflammation in the body in general, these are all allergies, immune system, endorphins, inflammatory cytokines, we all know them since COVID, insulin, all the other hormones, thyroid hormones, big one, thyroid hormone. So, and the other thing I'm going to put in, just because this is interesting, loss of body muscle mass can increase sensitivity to pain. This may be a long-term concern for people who are on the GLP-1s. They're immune biological agents. Now, this relatively affects people who are not that heavy, who just want to slim down for social anxiety reasons usually, and I'm not dissing that. You know, vanity is very important. But they are likely to have an exaggerated muscle mass. Because they don't have a huge amount of fat to shed, they're more prone to losing muscle mass. And if they lose muscle mass, more relatively speaking, then they are more likely to aggravate any centralized pain. So if they have fibromyalgia and they lose this muscle mass relative to fat stores, then they're not heading in the right direction. So I think it's important that the GLP-1s have a very specific benefit, risk-benefit profile to benefit people who are overweight to a point that their health is in danger. But they can be misused for this social, and there's something like 20-30% of prescriptions for them are actually in the misuse category. And I'm just saying to people, be careful what you're choosing for yourself. Mm-hmm. And there's no ideology in there at all and no judgment. I'm just making the point. So the muscle loss is disproportionate to weight-related health issues. There, that's it in a nutshell. So here's what you can do. You can retrain the brain circuits, training the brain to stop treating neutral sensations as danger signals. Modulate the brain from the top down, so you inhibit this, turn down the amplification. Understanding the pain is a warning system rather than a danger. Understanding that can reduce the amplification. Psychological techniques, cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness-based stress, meditation can lower pain levels. This is what I'm saying, the balancing the quiet and the distract. Graded activity, we've talked about here, that's recalibrating the nervous system. Targeting emotional processing, addressing underlying stress, emotional trauma, psychological difficulties. They're all of that. What they don't say is addictions, I would say. This is in one of the lists that I think I would say managing addictions, whether it's work addictions, exercise addictions. This is very painful for people who have an exercise addiction and they can't relieve their stress that way. One thing to look out for with the examination is actually looking for nervous system overdrive, and that means like a very raised heart rate, significant sweating, and if the pain is regional or on one side, it can be just on one side, or trigeminal neuralgia, it can be just on one side, and dilated pupils. And this is like when the sympathetic nervous system, it's like it's out of control. That's a gorse fire. That's like intense heat, intense blaze, right? So if you know that this is what's definitely involved if you have those. They're not that common. Like lots of people have centralized pain and it's not that dramatic, but that's certainly an indication. So what you have going on in your nervous system is a tug of war between glutamate and GABA. Okay, you don't need to know about all of these. Glutamate heightens the triggers of chronic pain. GABA helps the balancing the excitement, it helps turn down the amplification. So glutamate and GABA. Herbs that help. Yay! Herbs are heroes.
I've been waiting. All right. I've been
waiting. Herbs help you be your own hero.
Yay. Okay,
that's the way we would put it. So herbs that particularly act on GABA are valerian, officinalis, Schizandra chinensis, any of the artemisias, Artemisia abs or Artemisia vulgaris, Californian poppy, which is Eschscholzia californica, passiflora, which is passion flower, withania, which is also known as andrographis, and there's another word that people are, ashwagandha is the other word that people are more familiar with at the moment, lemon balm, which is Melissa officinalis, and citrus aurantium, which is a bitter orange. So the specific these specific chemicals in these herbs serve to naturally modulate GABA receptor alkanes, alkaloids, flavones, flavonoids, isoflavonoids, phenols, terpenes, and coumarins. Just in case people think I'm making this stuff up. Okay. the other one, which the other constituent of herbs is our pigeonin, and that's present in chamomile and passiflora, which is the passion flower. The other herb that I find very useful in balancing the autonomic nervous system is Lycopus virginicus, which is bugleweed. This is where knowing the Latin name is very important, because if you look up bugleweed, you'll find a different herb with a different Latin name. So you need to look it up under Lycopus virginicus. That works by influencing the thyroid hormone. The supplement most in tune with the science behind GABA, dopamine and serotonin receptors useful to inhibit glutamate uptake is L-theanine. And you get L-theanine, the most rich source of L-theanine is green tea, particularly that grown in the shade, which is the matcha. Okay?
Yes.
Lavangula binds glutamate receptors and serotonin transporters. So, the evidence for these actions suggests that multiple plant-derived substances may serve as sleep aids by modulating GABAergic signaling in the brain. So we know that anything that alters GABA will help this autonomic modulation. And sleep, the research on it has been done on sleep, so better sleep is likely. You can't say one is cause and effect when it's too separated by one whatever. But we know that these herbs help with sleep. We know they do that by way of GABA. We know that GABA is implicated in these. So there is a likelihood. It's also my clinical experience.
Yes.
All right. Also, clinical experience is all of the ways of altering the, of making the gut flora most beneficial, right? And that's usually increasing the diversity of flora. Another herb I use a lot would be filipendula, which is a digestive and pain reliever. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the other thing, I don't have a huge amount of evidence for this, but I find that since the population is now taking natural salt, right? The salt I grew up with was the big tub of table salt mm-hmm. that had added iodine. But now a lot of people are taking rock salts or Himalayan salts or whatever. And I don't know what the equivalent is of that. But I think there is evidence that we are, for a lot of us, are going around with too little iodine.
Oh.
Now, you can be supplemented with too much iodine. Hmm. So that's a difficult one to recommend, certainly on a population basis.
Yeah.
But I have no hesitation in encouraging people to eat seaweed as part of their diet.
Yes.
Because that way you get fiber, sea minerals, including iodine, when a lot of our fruit and vegetables are grown in soils that themselves could do with re-fertilizing and re-improving, right, in terms of their microflora. So another one of the things I suggest is seaweed in the diet, and also nigella seeds, because they're essential fatty acids and anti-inflammatory. So everything that's anti-inflammatory, mm-hmm. all right? So we have a high suspicion of gluten involvement. If eating a meal, particularly that contains cereals with gluten in it, leaves you anything except replete. Right? Satiety. People have all this stuff about eating without mentioning, do you feel full? That's the function of your food, is to feel full. That's it. It doesn't, there's no other magic ingredient. So you want to do everything that you've heard, seen, that I might talk about again on gut microflora. Movement, especially nervous system balancing movements like Tai Chi, yoga, Qigong, but they're quite likely to need to be adapted. And to do it very slowly. There are programs, particularly for recharging and using this neuroplasticity. Quieten and distract life routines. Vitamin D, monitor if possible. Taking care of the circadian rhythms, especially sleep. Taking care of period cycles for women who are in their fertile years. Yeah. Again, I'm sure I talk about that when I talk about the premenstrual. Food is seaweed in the diet. Also sage, garlic, nigella seeds and fiber. Any issues to do with insulin include fenugreek, or hormone balance include fenugreek seeds. For epilepsy that's refractory to treatment, or if somebody is keto diet, unless it's a centralized brain injury pain, you know. So anyway, it's so difficult, and it needs it can mean mentoring, and it needs to be by way of blood tests. So the evidence is specifically for refractory epilepsy. People use keto diets for all kinds of other things. I'm not talking about those, but that's where the evidence is. Acupuncture helps treat centralized pain by modulating the nervous system, reducing hyperactive brain pain circuits, and triggering natural pain relief. Research shows that it reverses central sensitization by inhibiting neuroplastic state changes. I didn't get a chance to reduce all of that. Sorry about that. So helpful for conditions like chronic low back pain, fibromyalgia, and neuropathic pain. Sunlight, if I haven't mentioned it before. Sauna, the far infrared sauna. I have one which folds up and it fits in a suitcase. You don't have to, you know, do massive house reorganization. Localized laser, particular for things like the myofascial pain, can be very helpful. TENS machines, often availed of through your physiotherapist, and all of the local therapies that can get you moving, or that can be advised about these gradual pain and gradual exercise introductions and everything. So we have, what do you think, Kat?
I love it. I have one question though for you. And this is, and I'm only talking about my own experience. So a couple of years ago, I fell down a flight of stairs and I hurt my hip. Now, the pain and the injury healed, but there would have been other occasions where frightening things happened to me and all of a sudden the hip got sore. So there would have been storage pain, if you get me. Does that obviously affect? Is that just me or does that affect?
No, I think that's a very common thing. And I would say what it does is that your pain has recovered from the local injury, but there's a memory of that pain.
Yeah.
The pain, the body remembers. Right?
Yes, yeah.
And your temporary fright, startle, you know, whatever it is that gave you a very challenging danger signal.
Yeah, yeah.
Made your brain remember this, but it hasn't got stuck in being an everyday occurrence.
Yes.
Right? But you're advised to avoid as many of those life-threatening frights.
Yeah, I know.
And take care of yourself. But I would say that's how I would read it. Yeah.
Yeah, so there is the thing, because I thought it was just myself, and I went, okay, that's one thing. I did want to ask you about that anyway, but I was like going, so do we do store, obviously you're talking about the memory and the brain and how everything is broadcasted, like you said, and that.
Yep.
But we do have a tendency of, well, I do, of sometimes thinking that, okay, there's pain there, but it's not, you know, it's not hurting me now, but it comes out. Yeah. Now and again.
And the important thing with that is to go, this happened to me, it's re-triggered this, it's not a reason to stop walking.
Right, okay.
It's not a reason to lose my confidence.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything, it doesn't mean I'm in danger, it just means that it's remembering.
Yeah.
That's the... That was really helpful.
Yeah.
Because you're... And all of these things, there's hybrids between localized pain and centralized pain.
Yes.
I'm making it sound like it's clear and cut. Is there anything in the body that's, you know, divided by sharp lines of whatever? Mm. Some of these things, like the localized pain, can become a hybrid. So you're describing like a hybrid there between the localized. But if you trigger things, it can become centralized.
Sure.
But thankfully, it hasn't gone on to be a recurring. That's not a recurring pain thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But recovery is possible.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It just was just interesting just to kind of find out if it was just me thinking about it a bit too much, or is it actually there? Is it actually... But it's more, what you're saying is it's coming more through into the brain, really, and
yep.
It's a registered thing, yeah. So I get it. So
yep.
Thanks for answering that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate
it's
that.
A great question. And please send in any of your questions.
Yeah, we'd love to hear.
That would be good.
Yeah.
And you have the email up, do you?
Yes, everything's there.
Everything's there.
All the information's on the podcast, all the links, everything's there if you want to get in contact with us. That's it for today, is it?
I would say that this is an indication for seeing an acupuncturist and a herbalist in my field of work. They're
yes,
the ones
of course.
That I would be doing. And then there are various, I mean, people have found various programs, and I can discuss anything that people are trying for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I often act as a sounding board, and your herbalist, if you've got one local to you,
mm-hmm.
would be right, what have we tried? Let's keep the ball moving up the hill, up mm-hmm. the incline, if you know what I mean. It's very, very difficult to manage this on your own.
And the one thing there you mentioned earlier about the likes of iodine and seaweed, to buy Dults online or get it from you is cheap as chips. It's like, it's like a bag of crisps.
Oh, the reason I ask people to introduce things into their diet is we all have take supplements, mm-hmm. and then we take them and take them, and then we stop taking them.
Yeah.
And then we go, oh God, yeah, I forgot to take them, and you yeah. might do it again. Whereas if you've got it in your kitchen, you put it in with your sautéed onions and your other and your other spices, then, you know, it's a habit.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you think that's part of what I do.
And you could throw it into a salad or something as well, yeah. you know. Which is so good. Because the one thing I will say, remember years ago growing up, my parents had it all the time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was, they were used to eating it. They ate it. It was just like a bag of crisps.
The dulse. Yeah. Disc or dulse.
Yeah. It's more like a bag of crisps to them more than anything else, really. Yeah. You know?
But this bladder rack, this whatever, we live by the sea here, you know, and I tell people to go and harvest it and dry it and snip it up and throw it in. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, that's all for today from this episode of the Herb Doctor podcast with Dr. Dalish Clare and myself. We hope today's conversation gave you some insights and understanding into pain and supporting your well-being naturally. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of yourselves. And you can find us all on all platforms of social media and get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Isn't that right, Dalish?
Absolutely.
Okay, last word from you.
Take care.